we inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance character, and character hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to At the Core with Walker Waubman and Rick Green. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. Thanks for joining me today. And wow, so much to cover just from Trump's address to Congress, let alone the headlines. The good, the bad, and the ugly. We're going to try to get to all of it. If you would like to participate, 888-589-8840. 888-589-8840. And here's what I'd love to hear from you. What was your favorite line? What was your favorite line of what I think is the greatest speech given to Congress ever? 2 hours of essentially, I felt like I was at a football game. I'm literally in the back of the room cheering. We're watching it at the Patriot Academy campus on our huge, massive wall screen. And we had just had a reception talking about Patriot Academy and, you know, house was full. And I mean, I'm telling you, we had a blast. I don't even know where to start. This guy knows better how to play a crowd and the camera and use moments like this than anybody that I've ever watched, anybody that I've ever known. I mean, Ronald Reagan was a master, right? Ronald Reagan had, you know, all those years as an actor, all those years for GE, traveling around the country, speaking to all of those groups, you know, practiced the same lines. He knew exactly how long to pause. I mean, he was amazing. That's why he was the great communicator. I named a kid after him. I got another kid born on his birthday. Used to have a dog named Dutch. I am a Ronald Reagan fan. Did a documentary about him. Ronald Reagan was nothing compared to what Donald Trump is doing in his mastery of using the camera, the speech opportunity to drive home what he's doing and to just decimate his enemies. I could not believe. I sat there over and over and over again, laughing out loud, clapping, cheering as he did things that I've never seen a president do. I've never seen a politician do. His ability to say what we're all thinking, and to silence the opposition. I mean, just could not. It was hilarious. And to set them up. He set them up. He played them like a fiddle. He knew they're going to do their bitter, you know, sourpuss, just, you know, sour face, can't smile at anything he's saying, can't even cheer for a kid with, I can't remember if it was brain cancer or brain surgery, you know, that his dream is coming true and he's surprised to be named a Secret Service agent. The smile on this kid's face brought tears to my eyes, and these people could not even cheer for that kid. The West Point, the kid that gets into West Point, and then 13-year-old goes down and high fives him, and they still can't cheer for that. It was the worst commercial for the Democrat Party, and the swampy, weird members of Congress that are on the Democrat side of the aisle. Worst commercial for them ever. They have no idea how fast they are losing the part of the American people that they used to have. Anyone watching that with any sense of a brain whatsoever, two brain cells to rub together, had to, if you were a Democrat watching this, you had to be so embarrassed. In fact, even some Democrat commentators on CNN and other places are talking about what a mistake it was for the Democrats to not cheer. Even Fetterman was talking about how foolish it was for them to not cheer for these things that should bring all Americans together. And then, let's face it, the Democrat members of Congress are a weird looking bunch. And every time the camera would go to them with the scowl on their face and just the hatred in their heart, I truly believe we're living in Romans 1. Everything about Romans 1 is happening in our country. And they are at that point where they, quote, lack understanding, where they are, quote, professing themselves to be wise, they have become fools. They have become so foolish that they do not realize how much they are undermining their own party, their own desire for power, all of those things. I don't know where it ends. I don't know what point they wake up and give themselves a Bill Clinton type to lead them that has the charisma of a Bill Clinton or of a Barack Obama that can at least make people in the middle feel like, you know, they're bringing people together, even though, you know, with Obama it was a bunch of lies. I think Clinton genuinely wanted to do that. I don't know. That's what they're going to need, and I don't know how long they're going to go, but the damage that's being done to the Democrat Party brand right now is incalculable. It's huge. So that's ugly. I mean, that's definitely ugly. I will say, though, Trump was masterful at explaining his policies, why he's doing what he's doing, having the show and tell of the 7 or 8 incredible human interest stories that brought the pain forward of the disastrous border policies of Joe Biden and his administration that showed the solutions and why he's been doing the things that he's doing. I mean, it was a masterful display. If you hadn't had a chance to watch it, if you weren't watching live, go watch it. I mean, it's on a bunch of YouTube channels and different places you can go to watch it. It's worth watching. And it is, if nothing else, it's worth watching as a lesson in public persuasion. Now, I get that some of you might say, well, yeah, Rick, but the way he made fun of Democrats and called Elizabeth Warren Pocahontas and the things that he did, it just made them hate him even more. And that may be true, but the public persuasion that's necessary at this point does not involve the embittered, hateful, you know, dividers of the Democrat Party. He needed to dismiss them. You have to be willing to make the right enemies in order to move policy forward and rally the rest of the country. No one, not even George Washington, no one will ever have a complete unanimous vote in this country. No one is going to have everyone. There's always going to be 20% that are naysayers to anything, whatever it is, no matter what. And you have to be able to rally the people in the middle. And that's what Donald Trump is doing. Just look at the numbers of Democrats that are coming to his side now that are saying positive things about the policies that he's doing. Look at the percentage of people that are supporting the things that he's doing. 65, 70, 75, sometimes almost 80% in the polling supporting what Donald Trump has been doing over the last month. And he emphasized it. He slam dunked it. He put the spike in the ground for all of those things, whether it's the gender issue and men and women's sports, a hole that the Democrats have dug for themselves and their own insanity on display once again during this speech, and their opposition to his, their unwillingness to stand and cheer or even agree on some of these basic biological facts is just making their situation worse. And so he was masterful at highlighting those differences, at driving that home so that average Joe American comes to the Republican side and to Donald Trump's side and to his policies. And it's not Republican principles, folks. This is not it shouldn't be a Republican versus Democrat things. He's literally bringing common sense back. These are policies that all Democrats and all Republicans virtually 20 years ago agreed on. And now you have this entrenched leftist leadership in the Democrat Party, and so the members of Congress there are beholden to that, and they cannot even get themselves to walk across the aisle and agree with the Republicans and the Republicans on these basic things. Even the men and women's sports, the fact that they would kill bills that would simply protect women, it's shocking. It is shocking that the Democrats have gone that crazy. I mean, they're absolutely mental. They are truly Romans 1 fools. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools, and they are without understanding, and they don't even realize just how bad that they are damaging their own brand. And I think it's hilarious. I'm sorry. I think it's funny. I think it is fun to watch the president drive it home. I mean, he was unhinged, off the charts in a positive way for a State of the Union or, you know, address to Congress. Was just amazing. And so I'd love to hear from you. What was your favorite line? 888-589-8840. I'll give you a couple of mine. The first line, America is back. Wow! I mean, you could feel the energy as he's entering the room, right? I mean, even as he's coming in, first when the cabinet's coming in, right? When all these go, and Hegseth and all these folks are coming in, you could feel the energy. I mean, this was like David's mighty men marching into a town. It was awesome. And then when he comes in, the energy's amazing. And then he gets up there, and that first line, America is back, and the place erupts. It's just, you can feel it. You can feel it all over the country. It's amazing. It's awesome. And then I love the line about where he was, I can't remember exactly how he said it, but he basically said, you know, the Biden administration said you needed all these laws to secure the border, and you needed this and you needed that. And he said, turns out all you needed was a new president. Oh, mic drop moment. So good. So good. And then of course the line about every child is created by God perfect. They are, you know, I can't remember exactly how he said it, but it was essentially saying to children that are questioning now their biology and their gender and all this evil that has been poured on them, that has been indoctrinated into them. He basically countered that with one really good line. It was so good. And then his line about, you know, these people will never support anything that I say, no matter what I say. I can't remember how he didn't say it this way, but I could cure the common cold was the way I took it. I could do this, I could do that, and they still would not cheer. So he set them up because he knew they weren't going to. And so then anything that he says or does, we know they're not going to cheer. They're not going to be for it. They're not going to be for common sense. They're going to continue to be against everything that he's for. And then someone had said his superpower is picking these 80% issues, you know, 70, 80% issues, championing them, knowing the Democrats are going to oppose him on something that 70 or 80% of the country agrees on, which, again, digs their hole even deeper and makes him even more popular. Just incredible. Absolutely incredible. Again, go watch it. If you haven't watched it, go watch it. It's one of the, I think, the best address to Congress I've ever seen, for sure. I think George W. Bush's address right after 9/11 was very good. I think that was one of the better ones in our lifetime that we've watched, but nothing compared to this. I mean, this was absolute theatrical mastery. I mean, played it to the hilt. The pauses, the showing of the executive order, you know, turning around and the gal being up in the gallery, just all of it. He honored those who had fallen, whose lives had been cut short by these disastrous policies of the Democrats. He laid out how quickly we were turning that around. It was just so good. So good. 888-589-8840. Would love to hear what your favorite line was, or what you most enjoyed about the President of the United States address to Congress. Already got people calling in with those. Going to have to take a break here in just a second. I want to mention one piece of bad news, and I'll hopefully have some time to comment on it later in the program. But the Supreme Court overruled President Trump on some of these executive orders stopping foreign aid. And there's a real simple question here, folks. Who is the elected executive branch? Who is the elected, chosen by the people, executive branch that has the Article II power to execute the laws and to be the chief executive and to be the commander-in-chief and to represent our nation? Who's over the State Department and all of these other agencies, the very few that are actually constitutional? Versus who is the unelected branch, the unelected, unaccountable branch, and how in the world does one district judge, one unelected, unaccountable lawyer in one district out of all the 1,000 or so districts in the country, the district court, federal district court level, how does that person get to make policy for the whole country? This is so upside down. This is so backwards from what the Constitution actually says. Sam Alito was in shock. I mean, his dissenting opinion on this, he makes it very clear. This is not what the Constitution requires, not what the Constitution expects. He actually says a federal court has many tools to address a party's supposed nonfeasance. In other words, a federal court has ways to deal with when somebody does something bad. He said, I love this, self-aggrandizement of its jurisdiction is not one of them. In other words, the court is grabbing power and expanding power that it does not have and that the American people did not give it. All right, we'll take your calls, 888-589-8840, about the State of the Union or the address to Congress. I know there's confusion over whether it's technically a State of the Union. Listen to Wall Builders from Wednesday, and David Barton explains all that. And we'll take your calls also on this court decision and other things. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. You're listening to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green.
Spring Share-a-thon is coming April 8th through the 10th, and we want to hear from you.
And it sparked something in me, and it started my ministry.
If you have a story about what American Family Radio has meant to you, call us at 877-876-8893.
My wife and I are expecting our first child, and I'm going to keep on listening and just being encouraged.
American Family Radio is a wonderful resource.
Listener stories encourage our staff and other AFR listeners.
I am seldom around like-minded leaders, and being able to listen to AFR all day, 7 days a week, is truly a blessing.
Call 877-876-8893 and leave a 1 or 2 minute voicemail. Then be listening, because you may hear yourself during Share-a-thon, April 8th through the 10th. That number again is 877-876-8893. 877-876-8893. And thank you for listening to American Family Radio. This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Rick Green.
We're back here on At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. Thanks for staying with me. A couple of quick thoughts on this this Supreme Court decision. So this was a 5-4, okay? So this is, you know, I've talked about this a lot. We don't have a conservative majority on the U.S. Supreme Court. We have two solid constitutional conservatives in Sam Alito and Clarence Thomas. And then we have some 80 percenters in terms of, you know, Barrett and Gorsuch and Kavanaugh. And then Roberts, you know, 20% of the time is there. So you can cobble together five votes once in a while on the right side of things, and once in a blue moon, six. And then sometimes you can only get two or three or four, and we lose. And so we lost on this one big time. And I like what Alito went on. He also said, he said, does a single district court judge. So quick primer for everybody out there, your federal court system, most of your state court systems operate the same way, but your federal court system, you have your district courts, which that's your lowest level, that's your entry level into the federal courts. So if you go to federal court, you're going to file in a district court somewhere around the country. And then you have your appellate courts, your U.S. courts of appeal, and there's 14. I'm blanking on how many, but you know, 10 or 15. I can't remember how many. And then your U.S. Supreme Court, and so that's the nine justices on the U.S. Supreme Court that most people think of as the court. Like those, that's the only judges that most people know. And then you have a bunch of administrative law judges and all these other federal judges. The number of judges, how many courts, what levels, all of that is set by Congress. That is Congress's power. Under Article 1 to determine those things. And Article 3, which is where the courts are laid out in the Constitution, it recognizes that. And so anyway, the Congress has the power over the courts, and as it should. That's what the founders talk about this, Federalist Papers, it all, you know, very important for us to remember that. Anyway, go back to that single district court. So you got one district level judge that's going to dictate to the President of the United States what they can do as the executive, how they can execute the law, what they can spend money on or not spend money on. This is insane. And so here's what Sam Alito said. Does a single, so this is a Supreme Court justice that's at the highest level and writing a dissenting opinion, because you're going to get four votes and they had five to uphold this district court judge's ruling. So as part of the four, Sam Alito's saying this is nuts. And here's how he said it. Does a single district court judge who likely lacks jurisdiction, so in other words, this is not even an issue this district judge should have been hearing at all. We got to get back to understanding jurisdiction. Who has authority to make the decision? It's always the two-word question, who decides? And so even if government should be deciding, the next question, and my friend Ken Ivory out of Utah State Rep there, and part of our coach team at Patriot Academy, here's how he says it. He says, okay, if government, which government? So first you got to say who decides, is it government at all? And if it is in the purview, in the jurisdiction of government, okay, then which government? Is it at the federal, state, or local level? If it's at the federal level, which branch of government should it be deciding that? So that's essentially what Sam Alito's alluding to here is, that the district court judge lacked jurisdiction on this anyway. He should have said, well, I appreciate the complaint that you've brought against the president of the United States, but I'm not the president. I don't have the authority to tell the president he can't do this. So anyway, that's what Alito's saying. Let me go back to his quote. Does a single district court judge who likely lacks jurisdiction have the unchecked power? So we used to believe in separation of powers, checks and balances. Don't want to give anybody the power, too much power, right? Does this district court, and granted, I know what you're thinking. If you're saying, well, the president shouldn't have unchecked power. I agree. Absolutely. 100%. The president should be checked as well. So the question is, at this point in the game, who decides what? Should the president be the one allowed to decide how to execute the laws, how to spend that money, the spending of money is a congressional power, right, under Article 1, Section 8. But then when they appropriate that money to an agency and say, now we want you to go do these things, the president's the one that's got to actually execute that. And if there's fraud and abuse in how that money's being spent, who else is going to stop it if it's not the president? Anyway, all right, so back to Alito. Does a single district court judge who likely lacks jurisdiction have the unchecked power to compel the government of the United States to pay out and probably lose forever $2 billion taxpayer dollars? The answer to that question should be an emphatic no. But a majority of this court apparently thinks otherwise. I am stunned. Sam Alito. That's Justice Sam Alito laying it out, explaining to us a district court judge does not have the power or the jurisdiction to do this, certainly should not have unchecked power, and certainly should not be able to compel the president of the United States, he says the government of the United States, in this case it's the president that's executing this part, to pay $2 billion of taxpayer money that is going to be lost forever. Anyway, that's what's at stake here is a question of who decides, who has the power, who's elected and who's unelected. President's elected by the nation, and the court, this district court judge, he's not even. This is the guy that's actually a Canadian citizen still. It's crazy, folks. Absolutely crazy. Just tells you we still have a lot of work to do. Okay, just because the president of the United States has been elected doesn't mean our fight's over. In fact, my post on X regarding this, I said, you know, we still got a lot of work to do with our constitutional education when five Supreme Court justices are so clueless on proper jurisdiction and separation of powers that they would allow an unelected, unaccountable single district judge to tell the elected chief executive how to handle foreign policy. Justice Alito was shocked, and then I put his quote out there. So that's some of the bad and the ugly today. Let's get back to some of the good. All of these lines from the president. All right, let's go to the phones. 888-589-8840 is the phone number. We will start with Lewis in Virginia. Lewis, calling from Virginia. You're up first, but go ahead.
Yeah, I got three quick comments to make. I loved it when they showed the Democratic side, and you noticed Nancy Pelosi looked like she was crying.
I know. It was so bad. They looked so decrepit. And just like, you know, not just bitter and all that, they just looked, it was just a horrible, horrible optic for the Democrats. Go ahead, Lewis. You had two others.
Yeah. And the other thing is that Trump's paying, you know, getting rid of these jobs, and they're crying because they got laid off. They get $50,000. I wish somebody would give me $50,000 and lay me off.
Yeah,
you know,
no kidding.
Yeah, plenty of time to find a job, and they get plenty of money up front. So I don't know why they're crying. They ain't the only ones that ever been laid off in this country. So.
No kidding, man. No kidding.
And the third thing I wanted to say, I'm getting a shirt made up. They ain't no more Democrats. They're Democrats. And you can't fix stupid. And that's all I wanted to say.
Ah, Lewis, great call, man. Thank you for calling in. You know, it's so true, this whole thing about this buyout, you know, in 8 months and how much money they're getting paid. And they got, like you said, plenty of time to go. I mean, they're being treated very fairly here. And here's what nobody's talking about hardly at all. I mean, Al Gore and Bill Clinton came in and I think by the end of their time, it was, I want to say 350,000. Maybe it wasn't that many. But it was around that. And I bet they didn't get that huge severance. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe they did. Somebody might've got that can call in and correct me on that. Okay, we got Jim from Texas calling in. Jim, go ahead, man. You're up next.
Hi.
Hey, Jim, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yeah, yeah. Go ahead, Jim.
There you are. Hi.
Yes, sir. You have a comment, question, or insult for us today? Go ahead.
All right. Yeah, my favorite moment was when President Trump was reading the list of the people who were over 100 years old, some over 200 years old.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
The one that was over 300.
Yes.
There was one person that was over 300 years old, and they're drawing Social Security. And he says, I guess Americans are more healthy than we thought.
I know, man. It was so good. And you know what surprised me, Joe? He went through all these stats that would normally be so boring, right? I mean, even though it was shocking that these people were, but normally when you read that much detailed information, you lose the audience. Not him. Nope. He milked it for every ounce it was worth. I mean, it was so good. And then the one-liners in between as he's reading it. And I think he even looked at RFK, you know, Bobby, we're healthier than I. Yeah, it was so good. Oh, so well delivered. And so infuriating to anybody with common sense is if you're listening to that and you're going, wait, we're doing what? We're sending out Social Security checks to people that are over 300 years old, 200 years old, older than the country. It just goes to show you how incompetent and how inept government is. And it's not that you should not have government. You just need to be reminded that when you have government, you're going to have fraud and you're going to have mess ups and you're going to have waste and all of that. And so you only want government to do what only government can do. Let me say that again. You only want government to do what only government can do. So you don't create agencies and government programs to do things that someone in the private market can do. There was back in my day in the legislature, there was a Texas politician, Carol Keaton Rylander, she was comptroller, and she would say it's the Yellow Pages test. And I thought that was a great concept, the Yellow Pages test. If you can open up the Yellow Pages and you find somebody in the private market doing it, you ought not be doing it at the government level. If there's somebody out in the private market doing it, you don't need government to do it. And so if government is only doing what only government can do, you're still going to end up in the military with abuse and wasted, you know, $400 toilets and the $200 hammers and all that stuff. You stop as much of it as you can. When you find it, you cut it out. But if you just wouldn't create government programs doing things it shouldn't be doing in the first place, then you wouldn't have near as much waste and abuse. Like Social Security, absolute scam. I'm sorry, folks, there should be no Social Security. It is not government's job to take your money for your whole life away from you and hold it over here in this kitty that they're not actually holding anyway. They're giving it to other people. But it is not government's job to force you to save money for your retirement. That is your job. When we answer the question, who decides how much money you should save for your future? It's you. And if you're a fool and you don't save and you get yourself in a position where you can't take care of yourself, there are people in your church and in your community and your family that should take care of you at that point. And it shouldn't be Taj Mahal care. It should be the least, because you didn't plan for yourself and you didn't make those decisions to take care of yourself or your family. And if we wouldn't have gotten government involved in the first place in all these things, families would take care of each other. Churches would take care of the poor. We would take care of the people that didn't take care of themselves. And we would have a safety net in this country. But that safety net for that kind of thing is not to be provided by government. It's to be provided by our neighbors. It's to be provided by ourselves, by our churches, by our communities. And we do such a better job than government does. So that's why government should not be involved in so many of these things that it's doing, and it becomes so incredibly wasteful. And Social Security is just a perfect example of that. Medicare, Medicaid, same thing in those areas as well. Okay, I think we can get a couple more calls before we go to the break. I think Scott was the next one up. Scott in Mississippi, go ahead, man. What's your comment or question? Or insult?
Hey, Rick Green. How you doing today, bro?
Doing great, man. How about you?
I'm good. I could enjoy the gloating a lot more if it wasn't for the fact that our country's in so much trouble. And
sure.
I think we have to fix stupid. I don't think we can say we can't fix stupid. I think we better fix stupid if we want to survive as a nation, because there's so much stupid that's been done over the past decades. My favorite line, just to go quick, favorite line was, of course, the mic drop where he said, turned out we just needed a new president. But the big thing here is it looks like we're setting up for one constitutional crisis after another one. And I want to know how many of these situations came up during the Biden administration that were just blown over, where there was just an ignoring of the crisis as if it weren't a crisis, because the executive branch could just do what they wanted.
Yeah, Yeah. No, that was the problem is that I mean, first of all, you're putting your finger on it. You have to fix stupid. You have to have constitutional education in this country. You have to get civics back in the classroom, back in the family, back in the church. We have to talk about these things. What's the Bible say about how to treat your neighbor? That's biblical civics. And so, you know, in the classroom, teaching these things so that a kid learns how to be a good citizen. So you're 100% right. You do have to fix stupid. And because we didn't yet fix stupid, the last 4 years, you had so many of these overreaches, all of these constitutional crises, as you mentioned, that nobody even paid attention to. I mean, we were yelling from the rooftops, right, and trying to raise it. But even when the Supreme Court would say this is unconstitutional and you can't, you know, forgive debt like this, and you can't, which isn't forgiving, it's actually making taxpayers pay for somebody else's debt. In other words, making up law. That's what he was doing. He was making up a new law. People just, like you said, they just blew over it and ignored it. I think that's changing, though. Jim, I got to tell you, man, there's more of an appetite right now for diving into these constitutional questions, into these civics questions, into how does this work and how do we fix this and who's the proper jurisdiction and where do we go? There's more of an appetite to ask the right questions and to study and to go through a constitution class and to run for office and to help people get elected than I've ever seen in my lifetime. And so we have a real opportunity, but you're right. It's going to take a lot of hard work. We're in a lot of trouble. Now I have to say though, Jim, or we might disagree. I do think you have to be a happy warrior when you do it. So I do think you got to still joke around a little. And I do think you still got to have fun. I think Ronald Reagan's line about happy warriors have to take back a country and a world of freedom. That kind of drives me. I think it's important for us to do that. And I think that contrast was on display Tuesday night, right? You saw a very serious Republican Party and a president pointing out just how bad a shape we have been in, but then joyfully saying, we have the solutions, we know what to do, and it's going to take time to do it, but let's go do it. And then you saw a Democrat Party that was just bitter and so lacking joy and so just yuck, right? And that caused people not to want to support that. And so we had to remember that if we're only being doomsdayers and we're only saying, you know, it's all done, forget it, it's all over, grab your guns and canned food, go hide out at the ranch, you know. I mean, if we're doing that, then nobody's going to want to be on the team. Nobody's going to want to join. That's like being the 10 spies from the promised land. It's too hard. Giants are too big. The cities are too fortified. We can't win. They depressed the people, and an entire generation had to die in the wilderness. So what we have to do is be optimistic, be positive, be eyes wide open, right? I mean, tell it like it is. That's what I liked about how Trump did that the other night. He was blunt, man. He just told it like it is. And but at the same time, came back with the joy to say, we can win. We can do this. We are doing this, in fact. And that's the good news, folks. It is tough, man. Our nation has been torn apart. The rot in the culture is real. So we have to get that. We have to dig that out. We have to turn that around. But we can do it. The answers are there. The Bible has the answer for everything in life, including how our society works. And we're bringing that biblical citizenship back to our country. Great stuff, folks. All right, we'll be right back. Phone number is 888-589-8840. 888-589-8840. You're listening to At the Core. According to a recent study of hundreds of post-abortive women, 60% reported that they would have preferred to give birth if they just received more support from others or had more financial security. That's where Preborn steps in. Preborn is there for women in their darkest hour, deciding between the life and death of their precious child. The reality is women are being pressured to make this fatal decision. And they're being told that their babies are just a clump of cells. Preborn welcomes women with God's love and introduces them to the beautiful life growing inside of them. That doubles their baby's chance at life. When you support Preborn, you're not only supporting women, you empower them. Your donation of $28 will help a woman to make a choice that she won't have to regret for the rest of her life. It'll give her the ultimate blessing, life. Your love can save a life. Just dial #250 and say the word baby. That's #250, baby. Or visit preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Rick Green.
Welcome back to At the Core with Walker Wobbin and Rick Green. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach, celebrating the victories already, just 1 month into this thing, or a little over a month. and highlighted, of course, in the State of the Union or addressed to Congress that President Trump did. And you know, to have that much progress in that short a period of time, and there's not a, the way the Constitution reads is basically that the president will essentially report to Congress from time to time is the language. And so I think it was an appropriate time. I mean, we've been moving so fast. There was so much to report on and to make the argument for the American people why these things are happening, I thought was brilliant and just a very well played. I mean, the White House is doing a fantastic job at the optics, the opposite of what the Democrat Party is doing. One other thing before I go back to the phones, it's all over the place. And President Trump has made it clear he wanted to do this anyway. That there's going to be a push to completely end the Department of Education. Now, the latest news, I guess, just in the last hours, he's not going to sign an executive order Thursday. I think it is it's coming, but it's not going to happen today. And there was a draft, and they were talking about him essentially directing the Department of Education, the Secretary of Education, to take all necessary steps to facilitate a closure of the Department of Education. I think that should be done. I don't know why they're rethinking that or why they pulled that back, but apparently there's something going on, and they're going to essentially say instead, we want you to review the department. But it's kind of the same thing. I hope he's not getting cold feet on this. I can't imagine that. I mean, this is a man resolved to get these things done. The Department of Education, if you're thinking, oh, this means no education in America, no. The Federal Department of Education, meaning at the United States government level instead of at the state level, so Washington, D.C., the Federal Department of Education has only been around since Jimmy Carter. Okay, this was created by, unconstitutionally, by the way. There is no power in the Constitution for the federal government to have a single thing to say about education at all. They should not spend a single penny on education. It's none of their business. It's a state responsibility. It's a state jurisdiction. And so this was created in the late 70s. It's done nothing but destroy education. It's been horrible for education. It's made education far worse than it was in the 70s. It's a disaster. It's a waste of money, and it's destroyed the education system. So it should go. Absolutely should be gone. Every employee at the Department of Education should be fired. Give them the 8 months. I don't care, but just get rid of them. Get them off the payroll. The entire department should be shuttered. So I hope that's still where they're going to head. Every Republican president since Carter did this has said that they would get rid of the Department of Education. Ronald Reagan said he would do it, wasn't able to do it. George W. Bush said he was going to do it, wasn't able to do it. George H.W. Bush, first George H.W., then George W. And it just hasn't been done. Nobody's had the ability to do it. I think Trump could do it. I think the appetite is out there. And even though his executive order would not actually make it happen, it would direct McMahon to do a top-down of here's how it will be done. So it'd obviously be phased in. You got to figure out what do you do with that $300 billion? Downstream the people that were counting on that money or the programs that were already in place and all that? So you got to work it out, and you got to phase it in. But it could be done in a short period of time, and I'm praying that they will do it. I actually, if they don't just zero it out, I think they ought to send the money direct to parents. If the money's been appropriated, then I say go spend it. If it's been appropriated by Congress and this whole Impoundment Act is not going to go away where the president gets to just not spend the money, then send it direct to parents. Why not? Why not say, okay, I'm the executive. The Congress appropriated all this money for education, but it's my job to implement that, and here's how we're going to implement it. $300 billion? I mean, I think there's, you know, you do the math. I think it's, I don't know, what is it, 15? I think 15 million school-age children in America. Well, that's, what is that, $5,000 a kid, 2,020? I don't know what it would be, but it's a lot, okay? And I think I did the math the other day, and it was right at about $5,000 a kid. So just send the money to the parents and let them spend it through, on education, but let them spend it on the kids or a tax credit or something. That would be the way, in my opinion, to phase it out. All right, let's get back to the phones. I think next up was Lee in Texas. So we're still in Texas. But Lee, you're up next. Go ahead.
Yes, my favorite line, and it's always been because I pushed this about 3 years ago, and to hear him say it just recently is no tax on overtime. So many of us work overtime. And, you know, I calculated that if a man works 20 hours and he puts $20 and puts 20 hours overtime, you know, that's $30 an hour. That's $600 not being taxed. If he does that for a month, that's $2,400 not being taxed. And, you know, another thing.
And that rewards hard work, too, Lee. I mean, that rewards you for going above and beyond. Now, I personally think government should have no say on what is overtime and what isn't. And I think everybody should be, we should all be working 6 days a week, because that's what the Bible says. 6 days shalt thou labor and do all thy work. But government being involved in the whole labor thing at all is unconstitutional and anti-biblical. But because it is involved and is doing all those things, a policy like what he's proposing, as you just pointed out, would benefit those that are actually out there, have work ethic, doing everything to provide for their family. Why should they be punished for going the extra mile? 100%. Right. Go ahead. You had another
one. Is, it would shut up the Democrats, because the Democrats tell you that the tax cuts are for only the billionaires and the rich. And I'm going to tell you right now, when I work overtime, I am not rich, but I definitely could use that extra money without having to pay taxes on it. I think it would take me a long way, and I think it would take the American people a long way. And with a boy coming down the track with illegal immigrants leaving the country, that there's going to be work, and there's going to be that point where Americans are going to have to get up and really push to handle that over time. But the benefit is, like you're saying, it's all that money. But also no tax on tips and no tax on Social Security. Because I'm 65 years old right now, and I've got to go to 66 in 10 months.
And you already paid 40, it. I mean, it's double taxation. You already paid taxes on the income that you made all those years ago, and they already whittle it down to be so little. They're so lousy at getting a return on that. They shouldn't have taken your money all those years, and they certainly shouldn't tax you on your money that they're giving back to you. Unbelievable. You're exactly right on that one. Okay, let's see how many more we can get in before we run out of time today. Greg in Louisiana's up next. Greg, go ahead, man.
How you doing, sir? How you doing today?
Doing great. Thanks for calling in.
I just want to say the poor Democrats look like they ate some bad shrimp or something. They looked real rough.
That's a great Louisiana comment right there, Greg. That's just
I know shrimp being from Louisiana. So.
You're so right, man.
I don't want to say.
Yeah, something. They ate something. They thought something. Maybe it was, I don't know, man, but you're exactly right. It was funny watching, actually. Okay, let's head over to Mississippi. Joy in Mississippi. Joy, you're up next. Go ahead.
Well, I thought the best line was America's back, and the second one for me was no taxing on Social Security, because I'll be getting there someday.
Yeah.
It's on to the distant future. But also, I have a comment. I really, really think that we should have laid all those chairs out on the Democrat side with whoopee cushions.
I'm with you. Let's see. Let's figure out how to arrange that for the next one, Joy. That'll certainly
be technology today. We should be able to push a button at the podium for them to go off like Christmas lights for music, you know, in different segments in different places. That'd be a riot. I love that.
We'd be more like England, you know, whenever they have their parliament and it gets so rowdy, that could be fun. No doubt. Joy, thanks for calling in. Let's go to John Mark in Texas. John Mark, you're up next. Anybody else out there? It's 888-589-8840. Your favorite line from President Trump's address to Congress, or your thoughts on the Supreme Court decision allowing one district judge to prevent the president from stopping fraud. Anyway, John Mark, Texas, go ahead, man.
John Mark, Texas, yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. Turn your radio down so that echo goes away. There we go.
Yeah, I appreciate you. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for allowing me to speak. I usually am a shy guy. I don't speak on the radio. This thing is burning through me.
Yeah.
First of all, my line was when President Trump looked into the camera and let those kids know they are made in God's image and they need to be proud of who they are.
Wasn't that great?
Let's move on to that district court judge where he's overstepping his bounds. Why is it that when Joe Biden ignored the judges, when he said they asked him not to pay the student loans and he just ignored them, why can't President Trump do the same thing? And we keep playing the nice guys all the time, and these guys, when it's their turn, they don't play the nice guys, you know? So why is it that we have to capitulate to them, and when it's their turn, they do not capitulate to us?
Yeah, Yeah, John Mark, man, I'm telling you, I've been saying that for years. Drives me nuts. Drives me bananas. Republicans just bow and play nice, and we're just going to be sweet, and we want everybody to like us, and Democrats are running all over us and abusing power, and just we let it. And then we get the power. The American people say, we've had enough of the corruption, enough of all that. We're going to switch parties. We're going to give the power to the Republicans, and then – and then they keep playing nice, and they keep playing, you know, not being willing to gain ground and not being willing to call it like it is, and all of those things. It drives me bananas. And that I think that's why we're so enamored with Trump right now, because he's not doing that. He's actually doing exactly what you're saying. He's like, no, I'm going full steam ahead. Let's go. And he's calling it like it is. It's everything that we wanted in a strong leader. At a time, it's essentially a Winston Churchill, okay? Winston Churchill wasn't sweet and nice and one of these fake politicians slapping everybody on the back and telling people that he loved them when he didn't, or telling people they were doing a good job when they weren't. No, he called it like it is. I mean, he said it like it is. Part of the country hated, excuse me, part of the country hated Winston Churchill. They could not stand the fact that he was rude, crude, you know, socially unacceptable, whatever you want to call it. But he was exactly what England needed. He saved the country almost single-handedly. And Donald Trump is the same way. He calls it. He says it. He's probably more, yeah, definitely more smooth than Winston Churchill. And he can smooth over those rough feathers. Oh, sorry about that. Anyway, but he's still going to, man, some people just not going to like, and he doesn't care. He doesn't care if they don't like him. I mean, that's the difference between Donald Trump today and Donald Trump 8 years ago. Not that he was that driven, because he was already successful. It's kind of like being, I don't know, if you're already successful, like Ronald Reagan was already successful as an actor, already famous, so he didn't need it, right? He didn't need the politician famous thing to feel good about himself, and so it never went to his head, and he was willing to stand when everybody else was you know, against him, when even people in his own cabinet and his own family were not with him on the life issue and other things, he still stood strong because he didn't need the affirmation of other people. So Donald Trump had that coming in, but he still, I think, was playing the game a little bit too much because he thought he, you know, that was the way to do it. Well, now he does not care. He is a man absolutely resolved to do the right thing. He's a man on fire. He's radicalized to the Constitution and to truth and to standing for what's right, no matter what it costs. And so I think he's epitomizing everything, John Mark, you're saying that you want to see happen, and that you're frustrated when it hasn't happened. And it is an appropriate time, and I think he will do this. I thought he would do it in his first term. I think he will do this in this term. To say to the Supreme Court sometimes, when they get it wrong, when they're ruling in an unconstitutional way like this, where they're actually saying that a single district judge has the power to tell the president of the United States how to spend money, where to spend money, what to do, that's wrong. And here's the thing. We've gotten it in our heads over the years that the Supreme Court's the only one that can rule on constitutionality. That is not true. The president has the power to say whether or not something's constitutional. The Congress has the power to say it. And the most important final say on whether or not something's constitutional, it's the states. The states actually get to say through a constitutional amendment what's ultimately constitutional or not constitutional. So it's not that the Supreme Court has the final say, or that because they ruled in this way, the president no longer has any maneuvering or no longer has the ability. There's a time for him to say, I'm doing what the Constitution says. Now, granted, when Joe Biden did it with the, as I was mentioning earlier, the student loans, purely unconstitutional in his executive order, because he was making up a new law. He was not executing the law. He was not stopping fraud and abuse. He was actually creating fraud and abuse. But it goes back and forth, and that's why we can't assume that when the president or the Supreme Court or the Congress acts, that's the end of the day. They need to go back and forth, and ultimately, when there's disagreement between the three branches, two out of three wins. Here's how it works. If the Congress passes a law and the president signs it, and the Supreme Court comes along and says, that's unconstitutional, then Congress should repass the law, and if the president agrees with them and not with the opinion of the court, now they win. Two out of three win. They basically overrule what the Supreme Court said. Or the states could do a constitutional amendment and overrule, like with the 11th Amendment. That overruled a Supreme Court decision. However, if Congress passes a law and the president signs it and the Supreme Court says it's unconstitutional and then Congress passes it again, the president may actually say, you know what? I think the opinion of the Supreme Court is right. I didn't think about some of the things that they were going to say. Or I think their argument was good. They went, you know, I'm going to side with them. Well, now 2 out of 3 win. Supreme Court vetoes that, or president vetoes that law, and the president and the court together, 2 out of 3 win. So anyway, it's not always going to be cut and dry. It's going to be some give and take. Going to be some back and forth. But we should never assume that just because the Supreme Court rules, it's all over, that they have the final say. They don't. The other branches have a say in this as well, and ultimately the states have the final say. And who do the states listen to? We the people. So technically, we have the final say. All right, out of time for today, folks. Thanks for listening to At the Core. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. Be sure and tune in tomorrow. Walker will be with you tomorrow for At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.